And of course, we will be back with Josh Peck and Derek Gilbert as we talk about their work, The Day the Earth Stands Still, their website, officialdisclosure.com, of course, and we'll take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, our special guest Josh Peck with us and Derek Gilbert as we talk about, of course, ancient gods, biblical prophecy. Josh, in biblical prophecy, do you find that there are a lot of references to extraterrestrials, and they talk about it in terms of fallen angels and things like that?
You know, that's a really interesting question. That's one that we deal with extensively in the book too. I actually think instead of that, one of the typical views is maybe people in the past they mistook extraterrestrials as fallen angels and things like that. Well, in the book, we talk about what if it's the other way around? What if instead of they mistook ETs for angels, what if we're mistaking angels and supernatural beings for ETs? And so we discuss that in the book. In terms of Bible prophecy, it doesn't specifically say, extraterrestrials, but it does seem to say that some type of supernatural being or something outside our realm of physical understanding is going to have more interaction, later on in the end times. And that's another point, too, about what supernatural actually means. There's this kind of idea that, something that's supernatural in origin is somehow less physical or less natural than what we experience. Usually like ghosts, for example, are thought of as wispy or ethereal type of creatures. Same with angels, people typically think of. But in the ancient Near East belief, it was completely the opposite. These things were actually more physical and more, that's where, super physical, supernatural, that's where we get those types of terms from, that they're actually more solid than even we are. All throughout the Bible, angels have these incredible strength and power and all this type of stuff. So when in the book, when we talk about supernatural beings, we're not talking about some wispy ethereal thing that can't really interact with our realm. We're talking about something even more solid, even more physical, especially. I look at the world through a lens of quantum physics and extra dimensions and things like that. It just fascinates me, and I think it provides a richer outlook of our reality. But if we think of our reality as just one three-dimensional slice of a larger construct, then these extra dimensions of which we're just one slice of could be inhabited by other beings. And that might be what these angels and fallen angels and demons and, all these things are. They could just be creatures that that consist of more dimensions than we do. Now, that doesn't mean that ET can't exist, but based on the evidence that we looked at, it seems like the experiences people are having are more closely related with something supernatural or super physical rather than just three-dimensional and just purely physical with some type of high degree of technology. So we explore both possibilities.
And I think you make a really good point there, Josh. And we should point out that it was the late Harvard psychologist Dr. John Mack who pointed out that there are more than two dozen points of correlation between the accounts of people who claim to have been abducted by extraterrestrials and those who have been victims of satanic ritual abuse. That's not coincidental, we think.
Right. And we were talking, Derek, before the break about the old gods and the tied into the UFO phenomenon.
Right. I took a long way to get around to the point, which is why you're hosting the syndicated, program, and I'm not. I should have gotten to it a lot quicker. The point is that if the interdimensional hypothesis has merit, as we think it does, then we have to consider the possibility that these visitors, because we do not discount that something is going on. There are reports that cannot be explained by natural means or by natural phenomena, But if the interdimensional hypothesis has merit, we have to consider the possibility that these visitors have been with us all along, that they're not coming from Zeta Reticuli, that they've been here on Earth alongside us for all of recorded human history.
Have you two come across anything that has to do with submersible UFOs or anything like that?
You know, that's interesting, too, because we talk about the importance of water, not only in a scientific, but also in a theological lens. For some reason, water seems incredibly important to this whole idea. I mean, even on the just purely on the scientific end of it, right now scientists are searching for water world exoplanets. You know, they discovered the TRAPPIST exoplanet system, but they say life is unlikely there because it's more rocky and everything. Possible, but more unlikely compared to, like, if they were to find an actual water world where it's mostly or 100% water, then they think that that's a stronger contender for life. This is actually a theological point, too, mm-hmm. The importance of water in the ancient Near East. And I think there's a connection with that and these submersible UFOs that people are seeing and theories about underwater alien bases and things like that. Because even in the ancient Near East, there was a common belief, not just from the in the biblical narrative, but in all the surrounding surrounding cultures and things. There was this understanding that the sea had a connection to a supernatural chaos type of being. It goes by different names in the Bible. It's Leviathan, and there's other texts like the Enuma Elish and stuff that talk about Tiamat, and it goes by different names depending on the culture. But there seems to be this connection to otherworldly beings and water. So we heavily deal with that connection in the book, because I don't think that's something that's ever been written before. I mean, at least when we were doing the research for it, we didn't come across anything.
No, we find it in Genesis chapter 1, beginning at verse 2, where the Bible tells us the earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. And the word translated into English as deep is a Hebrew word, tahom, which is a cognate, it means the same word, different language, from an Akkadian word, temtum, which was the Akkadian word for the chaos dragon of the ancient Sumerians, Tiamat. And Tiamat was defeated by the Babylonian god Marduk. In the Canaanite culture, it was Baal or Baal who defeated the chaos god of the sea. In the Greek cosmology, it was Zeus who defeated the chaos god Typhon. And that's where we connect back into the ancient aliens theory, because Typhon was the god of chaos that Kenneth Grant, Aleister Crowley's personal secretary, believed that he was hearing from what he called the Set, because Set was the Egyptian name for mm-hmm. this chaos god Typhon, the Set Sirius current of this Ptolemaic magic that Aleister Crowley had developed around the turn of the 20th century. So Grant, that's where he developed what Crowley had created or had channeled into this magical system that was based around this chaos god Typhon coming from the star system Sirius. So again, we've got this idea that this chaos god who was there in the beginning at the creation of humanity is somehow coming back and isn't dealt with in Bible prophecy until chapter 21 of the book of Revelation, when the new heaven and the new earth are created and the sea is no more. The sea, the representation of chaos, this chaos dragon, Typhon, Tiamat, Leviathan. It even shows up in the cosmology, the religion of the ancient Indians and the Norse. Their storm god Thor has a battle with a chaos dragon. So it's a very common theme, and we don't think, again, not being coincidence theorists, that this is by accident.
What do you think is more prevalent, interdimensional beings that are visiting this planet or beings from other planetary systems in this universe?
I think we deal with both questions in the book from a theological standpoint, and maybe because it's newer to me. I'm really interested in the theological question: could life exist on other planets? You know, even within even with within an evangelical Christian biblical worldview, are there theological arguments that say that life could exist? And there are. There's actually a lot of good theological reason to believe that there could be life out there. Now, what I think is interacting with us here on Earth, I think the evidence points to, or at least more consistently, to the idea of something extra-dimensional, or at the very least interdimensional. Extra-dimensional meaning it has origins outside our three dimensions of space and one of time. Interdimensional meaning, you know, maybe it's something within our space and time, but has some means to manipulate space and time. So that's the difference between those two terms. But I think that what we're dealing with here on Earth, what's interacting with us, could be explained better through that lens rather than the extraterrestrial lens, meaning that they're from another planet. Now, that still is a possibility. There still could be life on other worlds, both theologically and scientifically. Both of those lenses allow for that view, at least the possibility of. So we go into great detail into all that and the differences between the two, and really deal a lot with the theology behind that question, because that in itself has a really rich history.
I think most people would love these visitations to be coming from within this universe, from other solid planetary systems. For some reason, interdimensional kind of freaks people out.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, it freaked me out, too, until I started really looking into quantum theory and things like that. And looking at it from that stance, writers like Jacques Vallée and John Mack and, you know, people like that, it kind of starts to come into clearer focus. You know, unfortunately, I personally think quantum theory should be taught everywhere. I mean, this should just, you know, people should just know, or at least have access to it. Unfortunately, we live in a world where a lot of physicists and scientists don't know how to explain it to lay people
right.
Like you and I, where in ways we can understand.
All right, let's go to the phones. People lining up to talk to both of you. Let's go to Robert in Tucson, Arizona. Go ahead, Robert. Thanks for calling.
Hello. You mentioned H.P. Lovecraft channeling old gods or ancient aliens. I've read, I believe, all of the Lovecraft biographical material, and I don't believe there is any indication that he was channeling anything. He was a horror science fiction writer of short stories, and that's about it. You can check with any author of a Lovecraft biography and see for yourself if you wish, but I don't believe they'll back you up on it, and that's in my opinion. So that's what I wanted to...
All right, Derek, let's get your thoughts on that.
Well, Robert, you're absolutely correct. Lovecraft considered himself a hardcore atheist who was a man of science. There's no question about that. His writings, in his writing, he was happy to turn to the writings of, say, Madame Helena Blavatsky, the creator of the Theosophy, in order to come up with grist for his creative mill. So he was basically using Theosophy and other, you know, religious backgrounds as source material for his writing. So it wasn't Lovecraft who thought that he was channeling anything. Now, that was the opinion of Crowley's personal secretary, Kenneth Grant, who noticed the similarities and some of the strange synchronicities between what Lovecraft created and what Crowley had channeled. So you're correct. Lovecraft considered himself an atheist. That doesn't necessarily mean, however, that he wasn't under the influence of something
right. Outside.
Brian
in Indianapolis, east of the Rockies. Hi, Brian. Go ahead.
Hey, George. How are you?
Great. Thank you.
Hey, listen. I got a question. I was watching Ancient Aliens last night.
Okay.
And they were talking about the ancient gods and the cities that are underwater that were made for giants and stuff. But this is my question. I was raised in a Christian household, you know, being brought up. So I want to kind of go down that angle. With that, with the ancient aliens using Earth as an experiment, and you were on the show that I was watching,
mm-hmm.
This is how I come to this question. they were talking about each different species of man, okay? And as the ancient aliens were dissatisfied with each individual species, they eliminated them or took them out, killed them, whatever. So being a Christian household, we believe that, in 7 days, God created the heavens and the earth, mm-hmm. and the great, floods and, with Noah and stuff, was just one, just God's way of cleansing the earth. What does your guest think about that question? Do you think that the ancient aliens, cleansed the earth each time they were dissatisfied with the experimental men that they were trying to create? And eventually they ended up creating us.
There's a fine line, too, Derek and Josh, between God and the gods, isn't there?
Sure. Yeah, and I think what we're dealing with are different interpretations of the same types of facts or people's experiences or different theories that are out there. I would probably agree with the caller because I grew up too in a Christian household. I would tend towards the biblical narrative, but I think that. Let me pass it off to Derek.
All right. Good handoff.
There are ways of looking at this. And first of all, I'd point out that anthropologists and paleontologists there's no agreement between them as to how many species of ancient humans there actually were. In fact, in December of 2004, a professor from the University of Adelaide in Australia named Henneberg published a paper, peer-reviewed paper, in which he showed that after measuring the skeletons of all the so-called proto-humans out there, that they were essentially all Homo sapiens, but his paper didn't get much attention from the mainstream press. So there's no consensus between paleontologists as to how many proto-human species there actually are, if there are in fact any at all. But setting that aside, yes, George, you're correct. There's a fine line between God and the gods. We do believe that there were gods, not a pantheon, that these small g gods rebelled against the God of the Bible, who is their creator,
mm-hmm.
and that they did and still to this day have an impact on human history.
Do you believe extraterrestrials are looking for their God as well? Trying to decipher, how did we get here? They're probably asking the same questions, right?
Oh, sure. If they exist, yeah. I would imagine they probably would have similar curiosity for those types of things that we do. I don't doubt that at all.
Well, I always think of the movie Contact with the alien talking to Jodie Foster and basically saying, we're looking for the same things you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean we'll never get the answer?
Well, I think we'll get that answer someday, but probably not in this time-space continuum. I think once we get the answer once we take that last breath or when the end of history arrives. At some point, we're going to get the answer, but probably not in our current form.
Get your website out, if you would, and tell us about that tremendous deal you've got.
Yeah, absolutely. It's officialdisclosure.com, and it's over $300 worth of materials, including our new book, The Day the Earth Stands Still. It's only $39.99 for this entire package. It comes with a DVD set of never-before-seen interviews from some of the most world-renowned experts in this field. It also has Tom Horn's secret Vatican alien Antichrist connection presentation, an official disclosure audio CD series with more interviews. My other new book, Unraveling the Multiverse, it has a couple of books by Dr. Michael Heiser.
All right, sounds exciting. We're going to come back with more. And welcome back to Coast with Josh Peck and Derek Gilbert, The Day the Earth Stands Still. That's the name of their book. We'll get to your calls as well. Gentlemen, tell me a little bit about the Rosetta Stone and what's going on there with the Rosetta Comet.
Oh, yeah, the Rosetta Comet. So this was a really strange thing that happened. There was a signal coming out. So the European Space Agency scientists, they were able to detect a sound produced by what they called Comet 67P / just a bunch of stuff that I can't pronounce, using the Rosetta spacecraft. And the sound is actually theorized to be produced by what they say oscillations in the magnetic field in the comet's environment.
Mm-hmm.
But there was still something so strange about it that there was cause for study. Some people have theorized it might have been artificial. And people can actually go online and listen to this, but it is really strange. But so in order to explore that question even further, I contacted a former government investigator, intelligence analyst, and codebreaker to ask his opinions of that sound to see if there was anything in it that sounds artificial. I put his entire response in the book, and he seemed to say that it's at least a possibility. The signal could be artificial or even possibly paranormal in origin. So it's a really strange story and absolutely fascinating.
It is amazing what's out there that keeps us investigating. And Josh, in your particular case, are you ever going to give up?
No.
How about you, Derek?
No, I'm not.
No, it's I can't imagine how anyone could ever get bored. There's just so much to learn out there that just every day there's something new. And so, for me, and this is how nerdy I am, an exciting Friday night is when I can stumble onto a new academic paper on ancient cosmology that I hadn't read before. So,
Let's go to Jim in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Jim, go ahead.
Hi, George. I want to thank you for, I call myself UFO Jim, and you played a few of my songs.
That's right.
Few years ago, I really appreciate it, and I'm sure all the other musicians appreciate what you're doing for them. I have a question here, a couple questions real quick, and I hope that you mentioned the first one to David Sirita when you talked to him, too.
Okay.
I was wondering, why haven't the UFOs prevented the North Koreans from launching their missiles like they did in Montana and Russia a few years ago?
That's an interesting question, because we do believe there's been intervention. Why not, Josh? You want that?
Sure. Yeah. It is interesting, and that kind of speaks to what their motivations could be. Because of course there have been times in the past where it seems these craft or these UFOs, whatever they are, that they've interfered with nuclear weapons and things like that. So why not in this case? Especially in the WikiLeaks emails, one of the points brought up from Terry Mansfield was that these beings, the ETI that produced the Phoenix Lights, that they're waiting for humanity to ask for help. So in the book, I kind of get into that and I say, well, haven't we been asking for help for, really forever? So that is a really good question. The furthest I can really take it is it just speaks to what their motivations might be, and it kind of shows that they don't always their motivations, the ETI or whatever we want to call them, their motivations don't always align with ours. So that could potentially be dangerous.
And David Jacobs believes that the UFO presence is very nefarious, that there's something very dark and evil here. Derek, what do you think of that?
Well, that speaks to the conclusions drawn by the late Dr. Mack, that the nature of the experiences of people who believe that they've been abducted by aliens is, I think there's no other way to characterize it except evil. I mean, it's intrusive. It is often of an intrusive sexual nature, and there is if these entities are advanced as they claim to be, they should certainly know that the experiences for the people who are subjected to these encounters is extremely unpleasant. It's traumatic. I don't think there's any way to describe it except as evil. And as Josh said, that speaks to their motivation, I think.
Let's go back to the calls. We'll go to Jim in Newark, Delaware. Jim, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, George. To your Christian guest, I came into the faith during the Jesus People movement. They called us Jesus freaks.
I remember those days.
Anyway, what better way for the accuser of the brethren to deceive the human race than by sending his angels to Earth as space brothers to, quote, save humanity?
You're not alone in that thought that UFO presence are demonic. And Josh and Derek, I'm sure you come across that.
Sure, and a lot's been written on that. We certainly tackle that idea in the book. It's not the main focus of the book. We really wanted to tackle a lot of fresh area that's never been uncovered before. But we did talk about that because that's important. And this kind of goes to the idea: how should we react if an actual extraterrestrial presence is discovered, or if some type of contact is made. And for me personally, and then I'll let Derek comment as well, but for me personally, if that day comes, I would look at it with a healthy amount of skepticism, but I also would not automatically jump to the, well, it's demons. Now, to me, a lot of that depends on the messaging. You know, it depends on what these beings are actually saying. If they're saying something that, you know, if they're like, to use biblical terms, if they were providing us with another gospel or something, you know, the Bible says, let those be accursed, and actually says it twice. So I would take that approach. But if they are a legitimate, you know, race of being somewhere, and they're questioning just like we are, like, you know, like you mentioned before, George, then I would have to kind of take pause and wonder, you know, maybe the demonic thing isn't the only answer here. You know, if they're not saying anything that's anti-Christ in nature or anti-God or anti-Bible, if they're not saying they created us or anything like that, then I would have to, you know, look at that logically as well. I'll let Derek. Derek's probably got stuff to say.
All right,
too.
Derek, go ahead.
Well, I think your caller makes a really good point. The Apostle Paul in the Bible warned readers of his letters that even Satan himself can appear as an angel of light. So the fact that an entity appears and is radiant and beautiful doesn't necessarily mean that their intentions are good. And I think that this is one area where critical thinking really needs to be employed in UFO or research into the existence of extraterrestrial intelligences. We can't assume that just because something presents itself to us and apparently has better technology and is pleasing to look upon, that their intentions are necessarily good. I mean, just remember...
And that's disappointing, because you would think that as you evolve to the point where they have evolved, that would change itself.
You would think so, but look at the experience of the previous owners of the North American continent, who welcomed these people who came to their shores with advanced technology in the 16th and 17th centuries. It didn't work out too well for the Native Americans. There's no reason to expect, and there are some very smart men who are making this same warning, there's no reason for us to expect that a legitimate extraterrestrial intelligence arriving at Earth would treat us any differently than, say, the Spanish explorers treated the Inca in the 16th century.
Let's go to David in Baltimore. Welcome to the program, David. Go ahead.
Good morning, George. Great program.
Thank you, sir.
I'm a real big H.P. Lovecraft fan. I've been waiting a long time for you to bring him up, and I just want to talk to your guest about two aspects of Lovecraft, particularly the interdimensional thing. Firstly, one of the great quotes from Lovecraft says, "That is not dead which may eternal lie,
yes,
and with strange eons even death may die." And if these beings are extra-dimensional, they're going to be a life form totally different than ours.
Right. They may take no more notice of us than we take of the ants beneath our feet when we walk out to get the mail at the mailbox in the morning.
Exactly. And the second aspect, you were talking a lot about water. The second quote, "In his house in Ra'eli, dead Cthulhu lies dreaming." There are many ancient gods that are mentioned, even in the Bible. In the Cthulhu mythos, we had Dagon, who's an ancient god of the Philistines, if you look that up in the Bible.
Yeah, and I've done a lot of reading on Dagon lately because it's almost become a running joke at the office, because I keep pointing out that Dagon was not a fish god. I think Lovecraft had a lot to do with perpetuating the idea that he was. He actually wasn't. Curiously, though, Dagon was the chief god of the area along the middle Euphrates region in Syria, which until very recently was the core territory of the Islamic State. Just a little bit of history. But in that parallel, that strange synchronicity between Lovecraft and Aleister Crowley, when Crowley wrote down Cthulhu, which his personal secretary later said, no, I think Crowley misheard it, it actually was Cthulhu. In those holy books that Crowley was channeling for his religion, Telema. He not only mentioned this Tutulu or Cthulhu, but he described the chaos god of the ocean, Typhon, and described an old gnarled fish with tentacles, which is an exact description of Cthulhu, as described by H.P. Lovecraft, independently of Crowley.
Let's go to Eric now, truck driving in Indiana. Hi, Eric. Go ahead.
George!
There he is.
It's Eric the Mind Control guy. How's everybody doing tonight?
Good, Mr. Mind Control.
Excellent, George. Hey, many, many years ago, I'm not sure exactly when or where, but I had heard somebody say one time that years before Anton LaVey penned the Satanic Bible and long before Aleister Crowley came on the scene, that many years before that, there had been a Satanic movement. And what I was wondering was, if this was indeed true and LaVey didn't pen the Satanic Bible until 1966, then what did those people use for their book that they read from?
And I would guess the Satanic movement was not only then, continues now. Do you want to take a stab at that, Josh?
Well, Derek's done way more research
All right.
into that aspect than I have.
Derek, let's bring you in.
Well, and actually, I'd pass the ball off to my wife if she wasn't in bed at the moment. But
what? She's not up listening to you?
A fictional series based in Victorian England. Think of this, you know, Jack the Ripper, but from a supernatural perspective. And she's done a lot of reading on the Hellfire Club, of which Benjamin Franklin was a member. And she's going to work some of that into her series, which is called the Red Wing Saga. So, yeah, I think there you can, if you do some research into it, you can actually find that there is a thread of people who've worshipped the dark side going all the way back to ancient times.
Were they burned at the stake in those days?
Well, it depends on how far back you go. I think when you go back to, say, the days of Moses, those who were worshipping the dark side were actually in the majority.
Cornelius is with us in Louisiana. Go ahead, Cornelius.
Yeah, there's George, Derek, and Josh. Like I tell everybody, I'm the God, Guns, and Gold Man, the Bible, Bullets, and Beans Man, telling everybody to get ready there.
Amen, brother.
This is my question for you. I watch you on Skywatch TV also on the Dish Channel. And please give out your 800 number before you leave tonight. My question for you, I don't believe in the rapture. A lot of these people are teaching the rapture. So if these aliens do come down and the Christians go up in some so-called rapture, I think that's a great deception. So God bless y'all, and I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And, well, the first point you brought up, the number is 844-750-4985. Yeah, the rapture is a tricky subject, and it's one that has a few different beliefs. There's the no rapture view, the pre-tribulation, pre-wrath, mid-trib, post-trib, pan-trib. You know, it's just anything you can think of. Somebody's thought of it. I think the rapture is one of those things that, you know, we should prepare just in case, but we're probably not going to know for sure until something actually happens, because you know, Christians have been debating this for, well, 2,000 years.
Yeah, I side with our good friend L.A. Marzulli, who I know has been a guest on your program, George, which calls himself a pan-tribulationist, that he believes it's all going to pan out in the end. I do believe in a pre-tribulation rapture, but I also believe, like Cornelius, that it just makes good sense to be prepared, because you never know what's going to happen.
You never know. John in Huntington Beach, California. Let's get you in, John. Go ahead.
Hey, what's up? I just had a quick question.
Sure.
With the astral realm, do you guys think that maybe it's an interdimensional realm where the extraterrestrials reside, and it somehow allows our spirit, but like when we do astral project, it allows our spirit to enter their realm and kind of get a glimpse of what their life is like? Or do you think that's...
I'm not sure extraterrestrials are in the astral plane. Josh, Derek, you want to jump in on that?
This would be two different categories. So the extraterrestrials themselves, if they exist, we would imagine they would kind of be similar to us, you know, three-dimensional. They're subject to time as well. The astral realm, that's something more closer to extra-dimensional. You could say interdimensional as well. That's more closely to that, and actually relates, I think, more to the idea of old gods and angels and fallen angels and demons and ghosts and things like that. Now, that's not to say that I don't believe such a realm exists. I absolutely do believe that a realm like that exists. I think it's real and tangible. I personally don't think it's a just a real quick testimony from me. I actually was in New Age for a while, for a few years, and I did things like remote viewing and astral projecting and stuff like that. The unintended consequence was a lot of the beings from that realm they came into mine and harassed me and my family.
Well, you got to be careful with that because you open yourself up to all of that. Josh and Derek, thank you for being on the program. Good luck with everything you two both do, including this book, The Day the Earth Stands Still. And, of course, they're on Skywatch TV.